This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
Great to have you with us. Coming up here in about 15 minutes, David Teal is going to join us from the Richmond Times-Dispatch. We got plenty of things to go over with DT, and we'll cover some of his. By the way, Teal has also released an all-ACC preseason team ahead of the kickoff. So we will talk to David about that and get into some other things. Plus, we will review the NIL, what we've seen in the last 2 weeks from name, image, and likeness.
Seen some players getting paid. That's what we've seen. Paid.
Have you got a – let me real quick here before we get to the Coastal roster. Have you got a favorite NIL arrangement yet? Have you seen one that – that kind of go, and that's an interesting one.
Yeah, so I can't remember the player's name or even where he was, but the player that signed the deal with PetSmart, was it PetSmart?
Yes.
Or Petco?
Yeah.
As a sponsorship for his dog, like I don't even know what the arrangement is, if he's getting money. If he's just getting dog food, it's worth it. But that has been my favorite so far.
Yeah.
Of all of the deals that have gotten done.
Yeah, that's Trey Knox of Arkansas that has the deal with.
Yeah, there we go. There we go.
Petco, PetSmart. When it comes to the ACC, I got to tell you, one of my favorites right now is Armando Bacot for some degree of a seafood company in Baltimore.
Yeah. Yep. I think that's what I would have aimed for as a player. Like, that would have been my sweet spot. Can you find the places that you like to eat and just have them agree to let you have free food?
That's
and I don't
exactly
know what
Armando
Bacot's getting. Like, but can I get, like, for me, Georgia Tech in Atlanta, what's the obvious one? Waffle House. Are we getting free Waffle House? Can I get free waffles?
And can
if
I get
the answer
All-Star?
Is yeah, I'll tweet every single time. Yeah. Exactly. And I'll tweet it every time I'm there. I mean, what do you need me to do? So I think that would have been my sweet spot.
All right, more on name, image, and likeness coming up. Let's get to the Atlantic roster for Thursday. Our coverage starts at 9 a.m. from the Westin in Charlotte. Boston College is going to be there, of course. Jeff Hafley, who we said in hour one, did such a marvelous job in his first season at Chestnut Hill. Roddy, he's going to bring maybe one of the best offensive linemen in the country in Zion Johnson. Phil Jurkovec, who's one of the top quarterbacks, and a defensive end in Marcus Valdez, who's going to get his chance to shine this year for the Eagles.
Yeah, Marcus Valdez, an underrated player on that defensive line, but the two stars on offense are going to get all the attention. Phil Jurkovec, who was excellent last year, and another guy who battled through injury. I mean, he hurt his shoulder part of the way through the season and had to play a lot of the season with a little bit of a banged up shoulder and still played really well. You've seen him get some love as a guy who could potentially see himself as a first couple day guy next year, you know, top three rounds potentially as a big, strong, athletic quarterback. Then you mentioned Zion Johnson. And the thing that I think we're going to ask Zion Johnson about, that offensive line struggled more than we anticipated last year. And some of that was the change of scheme. Some of that was some shuffling of positions on the offensive line. How is that coming together with the full offseason under Frank Cignetti Jr., and how will that improve? Because if they can improve that offensive line play, Phil Jurkovec is going to make whoever gets in the backfield miss. So if you can improve that, like, nobody may get a sack on Boston College all year.
Yeah. Clemson is the only school bringing two coaches. Dabo Swinney, of course, the head coach of the Tigers, and spring coach James Skalski will be there, along with Matt Bockhorst and DJ Uiagalelei, the freshman, if you will, from Inland Empire, California. Second-year freshman, I guess he is, at Clemson this year. So Bockhorst, Skalski, Uiagalelei, and Dabo Swinney. But we get to talk to Coach Skalski, Roddy. I'm looking forward to that. Yeah. That guy's entertaining, by the way.
You got to imagine that Dabo Swinney is going to go to DJ Uiagalelei and say, hey, look, just hang next to Skalski. He'll show you the way this thing's done. He's been to it. He's done it before. The question is, will we get – like, this is Skalski's last time being here, we think. I mean, who knows? He may come up with a way to be here again next year. I don't know. But – do we get like a Ben Bulwer type outfit? Do you remember the outfit Ben Bulwer wore a couple years ago?
I have a picture of it.
It was fantastic.
Yeah.
It was fantastic. Like, he had the bow tie. He had, like, the cropped pants. It was great. I want to see that from James Skalski. I do. I really do. And I think if anybody that could pull it off, he certainly could. So, Skalski, if you're listening, let's get the suit game. Let's get a really nice suit. You know, maybe something very bold to take some of the pressure off the freshman quarterback that's going to be getting all the questions about replacing Trevor Lawrence.
You know, I think I have a Ben Boulware picture that maybe we can share before tomorrow's show ends.
There you go.
Just to show you, this is kind of the standard by which, you know, the attire, player attire has been set. At the ACC kickoff, Florida State.
And who was it a couple years ago? Who was it a couple years ago for Clemson that brought the Trevor Lawrence wig? Because Trevor didn't come, and they knew that that everybody was going to want Trevor, so he wore the wig around. I can't remember who it was. One of the offensive linemen.
Yeah, John.
John Simpson.
John Simpson. Yep, John Simpson wore the
John Simpson.
Wig. Yeah,
it was fantastic. It was fantastic. So Clemson players. Known a little bit for having some fun with this media day. I want to see that again this year.
There you go.
I think it's a good year coming out of quarantine to do it.
Mike Norvell, if Clemson's bringing two coaches, if you will, Dabo Swinney and Skalski, Florida State's bringing two quarterbacks, Roddy. Jermaine Johnson's the Georgia transfer at defensive end. High expectations for him. Mackenzie Milton and Jordan Travis, and I'm here for it, Roddy. I'm okay with this one.
Absolutely. And these are two more guys that are coming to ACC Media Days to represent their schools before they've ever played a snap for that school, Jermaine Johnson and Mackenzie Milton. This is something that I think Florida State had to do in bringing Mackenzie Milton and Jordan Travis too. I mean, Jordan Travis earned the right to compete for that spot and earned the right to represent Florida State at this Media Day. But Mackenzie Milton is the star of that football team. He's one of the biggest stars in college football, may very well be the starting quarterback. So I think Mackenzie Milton is going to be a fun guy to talk to. He's obviously been dealing with the media for a long time. He's a great story. And by the end of media days, he may be he may be more of a fan favorite than he already is. But Jermaine Johnson going as well, really good player, transfer from Georgia that's really going to help them on the defensive line. So this is also Wes. This is Mike Norvell's first trip to Charlotte for the ACC Media Days.
That's right.
It was virtual a year ago. Same with Jeff Hafley. So a little bit of a – he's kind of a rookie with this whole Media Day thing for the ACC.
Yeah. Louisville is next. The Cards, Scott Satterfield, of course. 2 years ago, the ACC Coach of the Year. He's got C.J. Avery as linebacker and Malik Cunningham at quarterback. And here's another one of those tight ends, Roddy. Marshawn Ford. Big things expected out of him.
All he does is score touchdowns with Marshawn Ford. But Malik Cunningham, one of the quarterbacks in the league that I think looking forward to talking to the most, especially with the frustrations of last season. I mean, it came so quickly. The success came so quickly for Louisville a couple years ago, having to deal with the adversity of last year, having to deal with guys like Javian Hawkins and Tutu Atwell leaving. Who's going to replace those guys? And then on defense, I mean, C.J. Avery's on a defense where they're having to replace a ton defensively. Only a handful of their leading tacklers, of their top six tacklers, only two of them are returning. So this is a defense that was pretty stingy a year ago, under the radar stingy. So C.J. Avery's going to have some questions to answer about how they repeat that performance despite losing all the guys that they're losing.
NC State is next. The Wolfpack, of course. We talked about them at the top of the show. One of our storylines. Grant Gibson, the center. Devin Leary at the quarterback. But Roddy, one of the best players in the ACC is the linebacker, Peyton Wilson.
And one of the best talkers in the ACC, at least on the field, in terms of Peyton Wilson. NC State is, you know, we've talked about teams with sort of that quiet confidence. I would guess NC State has a lot of that as well, especially with the way they played last year after Devin Leary's injury. I mean, we had Devin Leary early in the season against Pitt. He was fantastic when he played. Obviously, to start the season was a little bit behind because of COVID protocols. Then he starts to play, plays well. Then he gets hurt. Bailey Hockman takes over again. So with a full offseason as the starter, no interruptions, hopefully health. I think Devin Leary is going to feel pretty good about the season that he can have with Bam Knight, with the group of receivers that he's got coming back. Emeka Mezzi, Thayer Thomas, C.J. Riley, Devin Carter. NC State's a team that's got a lot coming back and a lot of reason to be excited.
All right. Following the Wolfpack is Syracuse. The Orange, with Dino Babers, of course, at head coach, off a disappointing season a year ago. Josh Black is a guy, Roddy, that's made plays for him in the defensive line area. They had a lot of young stars emerge out of the secondary a year ago, but there'll be a lot of questions for Taj Harris at wide receiver about who the potential quarterback may be, and Aaron Service is the most veteran piece in that offensive line.
Yeah, I think that the two questions that are going to be most frequent for Syracuse, who's going to play quarterback and how's the offensive line looking? Because those are the questions that I think that need to be answered if Syracuse is going to take a step forward. Sean Tucker's a really good player at running back.
Right.
But the competition between Tommy DeVito and Garrett Schrader, the fact that you're losing some really good talent, Andre Sisco, who got hurt early last year, but also Ifeatu Melifonwu, Trill Williams, on that defense, as well as a couple of guys up front. So how does that defense evolve? They've got some good young players, but the two questions that we're going to ask Syracuse, quarterback, offensive line. Quarterback, offensive line. So you can coach them up on those two answers starting right now.
All right. Wake Forest will be our final participant on Thursday out of the Atlantic. And, of course, Dave Clawson's done such a marvelous job there as their head coach. Sam Hartman is a guy who feels like he's been there a lot longer than he has. Luke Masterson, very productive at linebacker. And Roddy, the emerging talent for Wake Forest is Ja'Cory Roberson at wide receiver.
And Masterson's a guy that's been a little underrated because of health. I mean, he's gotten hurt the past couple of years and missed significant time. And I said it earlier, that defense has to stay healthy. They've been banged up. The past couple of seasons got really banged up last year. And really couldn't help that offense. Now, it was a weird season for Wake Forest. It was almost like two seasons, the way it started, where they were playing really, really well. Right. And they have, a month and a half off. And then they've got to start getting kicked up and playing again. So a frustrating end for Wake Forest. Sam Hartman, obviously, the experience that he has can lead a really productive, really talented offense. So I think Dave Clawson, of all the coaches in the league, they're all excited about getting back to some sense of normalcy. I'm not sure anybody's more excited than Dave Clawson, especially the way and the frustrations that happened late in the year for Wake Forest with the stops and starts.
Good point. Good point. All right, sit tight. On the other side, David Teal will join us from the pages of the Richmond Times-Dispatch. We'll talk about his preseason All-ACC team and maybe the most difficult positions to vote for. And, oh, by the way, he's got a preseason ranking out, too. We'll break that apart. When Packer and Durham, Roddy Jones in for Pack, continues on ACCN.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Packer and Durham on a Monday. Great to be back with you. Thanks for dialing us up here on ACC Network, Sirius XM, ACC 371, and the ESPN app. Roddy Jones in for Pack. And ladies and gentlemen, talk about your vacations, Roddy. David Teal is back from a trip to the Rockies, where I think he covered four, maybe even five states. Reel them off. How many states did we hit, DT, on this journey out west?
Wyoming, Idaho, Nevada, and Utah.
Ho! Ho, Roddy!
It's a good group of states. Also, underratedly large states. So you are covering some ground going through those states, DT. I mean, that is some mileage right there.
We put about 1,500 on a rental rig and did some hiking and some caving and caught a Rockies game.
Caving?
We were in a cave at Craters of the Moon excavating, and it was fun, man.
Roddy caving? Roddy caving?
I mean, we're going to have to really describe in detail this cave before I can give a good answer, because I've seen too many movies that have caves in them that don't end well for the participants for me to just blindly agree to caving. I'm assuming this is a well-lit cave with a clear path in and a clear path out and no chance of the entrance caving in. That's what I'm assuming, David. Is that correct?
There was no chance of the entrance caving in, but we needed a flashlight at times, And it took a little bit of climbing chops at times.
Wow. Okay.
Nope.
All right. Nope.
All the way out on that. I'll live west. That's all you. That's all you and DT right there. That's all you and DT.
No.
Flashlights.
No, that's all teal. That's all teal. I'm not going in a cave with a flashlight. That's not happening. Saw too many Twilight Zones as a kid, man. Too many. I remember when Sheriff Andy got lost in the cave with Miss Crump that time, and Barney had to conduct the search and rescue for Sheriff Taylor and Helen Crump. So no, it's not happening. I'm not going there. All right, David. Here we go. You have been bold enough, some would say crazy enough, to release a preseason All-ACC team and rankings. I want to start with the All-ACC team. In your mind, what's the hardest position to fill out right now in the league?
I think offensive line is always difficult simply because I'm not sitting down analyzing tape and such and trying to evaluate leverage techniques and such. So you rely on previous all-conference voting and Jacob's blocking trophy voting and who's coming back. So that's always a little difficult. And the whole thing was more challenging this year, guys, just simply because this is the fewest first-team all-conference returnees that the league has had since 2013.
Wow.
Yeah. And that is transposed against a league that's got a lot returning. I mean, you look up and down these rosters, and there's so many players returning, especially from a production standpoint. So how did you go about trying to figure out where you were going to put people and who you were going to put on these teams?
I think, Roddy, especially with the skill people, you look statistically. You guys mentioned Mateo Durant, who's coming to Charlotte this week for Duke. You know, he averaged 6.8 yards per carry last season. That was fifth best among Power 5 running backs with at least 100 carries. I mean, to me, that's pretty daggone impressive. So I put Mateo Durant on the team. And I felt badly for leaving off Jahmyr Gibbs. But, it's a preseason type team because my second running back was Bam Knight out of NC State. You know, he rushed for 10 touchdowns last year and averaged better than 5 a carry.
David, here's the other note I noticed from reading about your All-ACC team. You made Sam Howell the preseason player of the year. And then I appreciate the caveat note. If he were to win this, he would become the first North Carolina player in 41 years to be the player of the year in the ACC.
Some guy named LP. How about that?
I mean, it's crazy.
How about that? All the great UNC players.
And guys, I went back and made a list of the players of the year since. 12 different schools have had an ACC player of the year since Carolina.
That's incredible. So, okay, David, when you sit down and do this, you obviously fill it out, you put it out into the ether. Who's the player or players that you've gotten the most fan feedback from? We won't call it blowback. We'll call it feedback from that maybe you left out. Who's been the most popular? Hey, how could you leave this guy out?
This year, there hasn't been much feedback, to be honest, Ryan. But I will tell you a story. One preseason, I made the mistake, and it was a mistake, an oversight, of omitting Derwin James off a preseason team, and Twitter went off. Oh, my gosh. You know, he'd been hurt the previous year. He hadn't made All-ACC, but he was on a bunch of preseason All-American teams and was going to be a high draft choice. I left him off, and Seminole fans let me have it, and rightfully so.
All right.
I will say, Wes, in David's defense, like, a lot of times you fill these teams out, And you do truly just forget a guy to put him on the list. So, David, that is why you are brave putting these out there, because I want it double-checked, triple-checked, so that no one can say, hey, you forgot Sam Howell on your list. It's like, oh, I thought that was the first name I wrote.
All right, David, here's where we open the show today. We know Clemson's going to be the favorite to win the league. They're going to be the favorite to win the Atlantic. The question about Carolina, Miami, Miami, Carolina in the Coastal. Got that part. If you're going to pick the third best team in the Coastal today and the second best team in the Atlantic today, who are you picking?
Number two in the Atlantic. And you look at how good they are at linebacker with Peyton Wilson and Isaiah Moore. We talked about Bam Knight previously. Wes, if memory serves, you did this game last season. I remember in early October being in Clemson, getting ready for the UVA game and watching Devin Leary and the Wolfpack in that two-minute drill at Pittsburgh.
Right.
Were you on that game?
Roddy and I both were, yeah.
Oh, yeah, I thought sure. That was not as bad as I feared. And I all that moment, and granted, a two-minute drill in a virtually empty stadium is a lot different than in front of a hostile crowd. But I just remember being so impressed by that, especially having seen the Wolfpack look so poor against Virginia Tech in the opener. And I just thought, you know, this guy, he's got something. And I think it proved out over the season. So I like the Wolfpack in that second spot in the Atlantic. And I picked Virginia Tech third in the Coastal behind Carolina and Miami. I think you can certainly make a case for Pitt. You can make a case for Virginia. My last impression of Virginia Tech in Virginia is the Hokies handling the Cavaliers pretty handily in Blacksburg last season. So that influenced my decision there.
All right. I'll go with this, Roddy, and I'll let you hang on real quick. Give me the storyline we're missing, David. What do you think we find out Wednesday and Thursday in Charlotte that we're not talking about today or tomorrow?
I don't know if we're missing anything, Wes. I can't recall a kickoff at which so many issues have swirled around the event. You guys mentioned them earlier. NIL, college football playoff. Transfer portal. Just think of the preponderance of transfers. You know, last season we had De'Aaron King and Phil Dracovic and Khalil Herbert. Well, this year I think there's a potential for even more transfer impact with Mackenzie Milton and Ty Chandler. You mentioned Jermaine Johnson earlier at Florida State. Charleston Rambo at Miami. Johnny Jordan on the offensive line at Virginia Tech. Anthony Johnson in the secondary at UVA. I mean, there's so many guys who I think could make such an impact this season in the league who are new via the transfer portal.
David, you're obviously close to the two Virginia schools, especially. We've talked a little bit about Virginia Tech, but Virginia seems to be a team that's flying under the radar. And if Brennan Armstrong stays healthy and takes a step that we think that he can take, this offense has a chance to be really good. What do you want to know from Virginia at this kickoff in a couple of days?
Well, Bronco Mendenhall made no secret as to his priority during the spring, Roddy. And that was the Cavaliers need more production from the traditional running game. Virginia's rushing attack has been pretty darn good, but it's been so quarterback-driven. First with Bryce Perkins, of course, and then last year with a combination of Armstrong and Keaton Thompson and Ike Armstead. They've got so many different guys they can put back there that have that knack for rushing. But the Cavaliers need just better production from the running back position. Now, is that going to be Wayne Talapapa? Is it going to be Mike Hollins? Is it going to be the transfer from Indiana, Ronnie Walker? That remains to be seen. But I think for Virginia to contend this season in the Coastal seriously, really need to see better output there from the traditional running game.
David, I want to wrap with this. Jim Phillips talks to the media for the first time on Wednesday morning, shortly after 9 o'clock. About 9:30, we'll air the commissioner's forum, his first commissioner's forum, prior to the start of the kickoff. What topics do you expect to hear from the commissioner, who's done all these visits, the listening tour, if you will? I mean, you were a part of a couple of them in Blacksburg and Charlottesville. What do you think we'll hear from Jim Phillips on Wednesday that could kind of set the tone for what the ACC football season and really the 21-22 academic and athletic calendar looks like, I think?
Well, I'm fascinated, Wes, to see how much progress the ACC Medical Advisory Group has made in determining testing protocols for the fall sports season. Who's going to be tested? Is it just the unvaccinated? Is it everyone? How frequent is testing? How close to game day is the final test? And how quickly can those results be turned around? I think that is a big issue. We're going to hear a lot about NIL. I want to ask Jim Phillips. Jim Phillips has two college athletes in his home. His daughter is a soccer player, Gail, and his son is a track athlete at Notre Dame. Phillips told kids about NIL and his advice on the subject. So those are just two things. And, of course, CFP expansion will be front and center as well.
Well, great to see you as always. We look forward to being with you in Charlotte starting on Wednesday. And our coverage starts at 9 o'clock. Be well, David. Safe travels to Charlotte.
Thanks, guys. The limousine leaves tomorrow morning.
You bet. Stay tuned. Don't forget our coverage of the ACC kickoff right here on ACC Network starts Wednesday morning, July 21st. It starts Wednesday morning at 9, Thursday morning at 9. Wall-to-wall coverage. The Coastal is Wednesday. The Atlantic is Thursday from the Westin Hotel in Uptown Charlotte. Sit tight. When we come back, more Packer and Durham. NIL developments in the last 2 weeks. And we kidded around about some of them, but we're off and running in this brave new world of college athletics, and we'll talk about it next on ACC Network.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
Packer and Durham on a Monday. Great to be with Roddy Jones filling in for Mark Packer. You know, right before we went on our little hiatus, Florida State quarterback Mackenzie Milton sat down and visited with Pack and myself, and we talked about a lot of things, including what it was like just to get back on the field and be on a team and get ready to play football in 2021.
It's been a long time coming. You know, been a couple years since I got hurt, but just grateful for the opportunity to be here, wear these colors and wear this logo and, you know, just really just play ball again, you know, my last year of college football, so I'm really excited.
The football journey is different for everybody, Mackenzie. What's the best takeaway? What's the number one lesson learned, number one experience gained from the last couple of years on your way back to live action?
I'll say the biggest thing for me is just take everything with a grain of salt and take every day one day at a time, because that's all you have is what's in front of you. So that's how I try to approach my rehab and, you know, really anything in life, just – you know, make each day count, and that's been the biggest lesson I've learned. And just enjoy it while you got it, while you're able to play this sport that you love, that you grew up playing. You know, there would be times, you know, when I was playing, or to be at practices where you don't really want to be out there. But now I don't think I'll ever have that feeling again, just because, you know, this past year when I practiced for the first time, it was probably the funnest moment I had in college football, you know, considering winning a lot of games and all that didn't really mean as much as just getting able to practice again. So I'll say enjoy the little things is something that I could tell everybody.
Yeah, you appreciate every single day, and you've been through it, like I said. We understood it for everybody that followed your journey, physically what you had to go through, but I think your mental toughness now has to be one of your positives, one of your advantages, isn't it? Just the fact that, hey, what you had to overcome from that perspective, and now you get another shot, and now you're at Florida State. I think mentally you got to be as strong as you've ever been.
Yeah, I believe so. You know, I feel like the rehab process, you know, part of it is physical, but I say even more of it, like you said, is mental. Just getting over that hurdle, getting, you know, kind of tricking your mind into, you know, believing that you can be somewhere when, you know, really you're light years away from getting there. So there were some hard days for sure, but, you know, I always just told myself, I always believed that, you know, I'd get back on the football field. And, you know, here I am with that opportunity. Couldn't imagine it being at any other place. This is unbelievable. This is something you dream about as a kid. So I feel like everything happened for a reason. You know, I feel like I'm here in this time for a particular reason. And, you know, we'll find out what that is come September and all the way through January.
You and De'Aaron King announced a partnership with Dreamfield. You know, we're a little old, so you may have to take us through what an NFT is and why that was attractive to you and in making your debut on the NIL landscape.
Well, the first thing I'll talk about is just Dreamfield and, you know, partnering with De'Aaron. And, you know, I think it's just an opportunity for us. You know, we're older heads in the college sports, this being our sixth year. And I think just our journeys and what we've been through has given us opportunity to think about life after football. And, you know, this is part of that. While it's something we believe in, you know, giving back to these athletes and where, you know, they can monetize off their name, image, and likeness. And it's seamless for themselves and it's seamless for businesses that, you know, want to sign up to the platform. And then with the NFTs, you know, there's been trading cards before. There's been artwork done before. This is digital art and it stands for a non-fungible token, so it can't be remade. And that's what creates rarity to it. It's a new thing. I'm still learning about it, but it's definitely something that interests me. And, you know, the auction is going to be next Tuesday. So, you know, feel free to tap in if you guys are interested in investing into the first collegiate NFT.
You know, you're a UCF guy. You're now a Florida State guy. You're doing business with a Miami guy. I mean, you're knocking down all kinds of barriers all at once, McKenzie.
Hey, listen, you know, when we're on the field is one thing, but, you know, outside of this, you know, I want to see everybody eat. I want to see, you know, all these college athletes capitalize off this opportunity. It's not about any one individual, any one individual. It's not about myself. It's not about De'Aaron. It's about all these college athletes, you know, getting to take advantage of this opportunity.
Hey, as far as your football team goes in the competition, what's it been like now? Again, because you got a competition at quarterback at Florida State. Nothing's going to be given by Mike Norvell. Now, what have you found in the competition in the spring, the summer, and of course now heading into the fall from a quarterback perspective?
You know, I think it's just been great. You know, I always feel like competition, you know, brings out the best in each individual. And that's what it's done for, you know, myself, Jordan, Tate, Chuba, Gino. You know, I feel like we all bring something to the table that maybe the other guys don't. So it's fun to, you know, see Jordan do his thing, see Tate do his thing, see these other guys do their things and, you know, kind of learn from them. And, you know, I feel like they're learning from me too. So, It's just fun. Competition is fun to me. And it's the same thing when you're competing against another team. You get that opportunity to go out there and showcase what you can do. And if you do it to the best of your ability, you know, you're going to have no regrets. So, you know, whatever unfolds in this time, the main thing is, you know, we stick together. We're all trying to get to the same place. And I feel like we can all help each other reach our own individual goals.
McKenzie, as this season unfolds, as a guy who's taken a lot of snaps, played in a lot of big games, understands success maybe in a different way than anybody else on your roster right now in Tallahassee, and I know they're transfers and guys from other programs, what's the most important thing to keep in mind between now and Notre Dame on that Sunday night of Labor Day weekend?
I think the most important thing is, you know, to be where our feet are. We are who we are today. And that's not gonna affect September 5th. We can't cheat the process. We got to take it day by day. You know, we got a little week break here for the 4th of July, so we can't be going crazy. We gotta keep that focus on, you know, the mission at hand, And, you know, that date has been marked for us for a long time. But at the same time, you know, we're not looking too far ahead. We're just managing right now and what we need to accomplish. And, you know, this final stretch of summer workouts, leading into fall camp, staying healthy, getting our bodies right. And to me, the game's already played out by the time you get there in the preparation you put in. So we can't cheat our preparation. And I feel like if we take care of what we need to take care of, we'll be just all right.
Roddy, be where our feet are.
Yep. Look, Mackenzie Milton's going to bring a lot of talent on the field, but one of the things Mike Norvell has to do is to reinstill a culture of winning at Florida State, yeah, which they have not had in a while. He's going to go a long way to that, both from a mentality standpoint, from an overall respect standpoint in the locker room. Dude has had incredible success from a leadership standpoint. It's the same thing we said about De'Aaron King a year ago at Miami, thinking that he was only going to be there for 1 year. Mm-hmm. From a leadership standpoint, he is going to change that locker room, and that is going to be felt for years to come in the Mike Norvell era. You can just tell by the maturity, the experiences that he's had, the success. And I think the ACC crew is going to have a good time getting to know Mackenzie Milton, just like you guys have since he's been at Florida State.
All right, let me ask you this. From the standpoint of impact, is he the quarterback on opening night? Does he take the first snap against Notre Dame?
I think so, Wes. I think there's a place in this offense for Jordan Travis. I think he's going to play.
Right.
But Mackenzie Milton, if you just look at what he did at UCF and then transpose that to how he looked in the spring game. Now, you can only take so much from a spring game. Guys aren't getting hit and all that stuff.
Sure.
But he was fitting the ball into some windows that we saw at UCF. And if he can do that, it takes that offense to the next level. From a maturity standpoint, he's not going to be – his eyes aren't going to be big going and playing Notre Dame. He's played on massive stages before. So yeah, I think he is the opening day quarterback if he is completely healthy, and there's no reason to think that he is not at this point. I think he takes the first snaps for Florida State.
Maybe the better question is how many quarterbacks are on the field for the opening snap?
Now, that is a great question, and we can ask that about a couple of teams because Jordan Travis, I would imagine – that Mike Norvell and Kenny Dillingham are down there in Tallahassee figuring out, hey, if Mackenzie Milton's our quarterback, how do we get Jordan Travis the football? Because when that dude has the ball in his hands, he is electric. So that, Wes, is the best question.
All right, thank you. Appreciate that. Step aside. On the other side, name, image, and likeness. Handful of developments in the last few weeks as we head to the 9 o'clock hour. David Hale, by the way, going to join us in the Power Hour today, but the beginning of an era of profit for student athletes is underway.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
Monday's edition of Packer and Durham. This is show 421, by the way, if you're scoring with us. Back after a two-week break. Some of us had bigger tours than others. Mark Packer is sidelined this week. Folks who are dialing in and going, why? No offense, Roddy, but why is Roddy there? Well,
none taken.
Pack's on the sideline. He is tested positive for the Delta variant. Has some symptoms, but doing okay. Fully vaccinated, and as of last spring. So, as we've come to find out in this country, according to the reports, some of that's not as significant if you've been fully vaccinated. And we hope to have Pack back by the end of the week. We miss him today and tomorrow, and certainly Wednesday and Thursday at the kickoff. Roddy, we've touched on this a couple different times. One of the interesting topics at the kickoff is going to be name, image, and likeness. I mean, we got a chance to talk to student athletes, and some that are going to be there are already involved in this. We've seen some interesting things happen, some unique things happen. But one of the stories that just developed over the weekend is that a fan site associated with Texas A&M has secured a deal to pay two football players $10,000 for exclusive interviews. As a guy that was interviewed quite a bit in your career, present company included, I would say $10,000 is a lot of money for exclusivity when it comes to interviews.
Yeah, I would just like to make it known, if anybody wants to do an exclusive interview with me now for $10,000, I am open for business. But for these college athletes, look, these are the types of opportunities that are going to be presented. And whether you like the way this looks or not, a fan site paying two athletes from the college that they cover to do interviews, a five-figure sum, whether you like it or not, I think it just goes to show you the what these student athletes could have been making all along. It's not going to change the way these two guys play on the field. It's not going to change the school they're at. Is it a recruiting tool? Sure. Is it a big publicity? Do you get a lot of publicity from it if you are the fan site? Absolutely. But as these things become normalized, if people do it more and more, I think we're going to realize two things. One, are you getting $10,000 a piece worth of return on that investment? And the answer is probably no. And two, you're not going to get the publicity that TexAgs.com is getting from this if you're the fifth person to do it. So I am happy for these players, though. I mean, I really am. Like $10,000, I would have loved to have had $10,000 for doing anything in college. Unfortunately, I came a decade too early. But we're going to start to see some creative ways for these guys to start to get some money.
All right, I'm going to put you back in your Georgia Tech playing days here for a few minutes, okay? All right, okay. So you played, very successful career, impactful player, media-friendly guy who, even in adverse situations, was still able to do the interviews and didn't mind the interview process, okay? But let's say you've signed an exclusivity with an outlet, okay? And in this case, let's just... Let's say you've thrown airjackets.com, whatever, okay? You're playing at Georgia Tech. You've signed the $10,000 deal for exclusive interviews, okay? Exclusive. So now I am the multimedia rights holder of the radio network, and I have paid the institution seven figures a year for the multimedia rights, which includes television show, radio network, website, all the things that are the, quote, official of the school. Are you still going to do those interviews if you're a player, or are you bound to the agreement to be with the website, the fan site, if you will?
Look, I'm still going to do the interviews because all that other stuff, like that stuff that the school, the NCAA, and Congress need to figure out. If it's not explicitly defined in the rules that you cannot do it, ask for forgiveness, not permission when it comes to this stuff. So just because the quote-unquote adults in the room don't have their stuff together, figuring out exactly what you can and can't do, that's not going to prohibit me as a student athlete from going and doing something. So I think we are going to see more stuff like the Barstool stuff that we saw, where student athletes are all of a sudden saying, I'm a Barstool athlete. And then we all look up and realize Barstool is affiliated with gambling. So, hey, we can't associate with Barstool. Well, nobody said that before. And that's because, again, the quote-unquote adults in the room haven't figured out how we were going to do this. And that's the other part of this, Wes. Like, people continually say, well, colleges are just going to figure out how to pay athletes, like this TexAgs.com thing. Like, that's not a student athlete issue. You should not punish the student athletes because the people with the money all of a sudden decide they're going to spend it on the second string running back or the first string running back at their favorite school. That should be an adult responsibility thing. Like, hey, maybe we shouldn't be paying XYZ to this player. It reminds me of sort of like the salary cap thing in basketball, the whole argument that like LeBron James is underpaid. And the reason that you have a salary cap is because the billionaires wouldn't be able to control themselves and how much they spend. Like, that's a billionaire problem. That's not a player problem. So with NIL, like, when we get in these issues and people are like, well, players are just going to get paid now. Well, okay, that's not the player's fault. The player shouldn't be punished for that. We should educate the people with the money on what the best way to spend this is. And if it's their money, let them spend it however they want.
All right, so now I'm going to follow up. So you've said you're going to have the exclusivity, but you're still going to do the institutional branded media, radio, TV show, website, things like that. Are you going to do the weekly press conference?
I don't think you're going to have any issues there. So yes is the answer to that. But once you get paid for one interview, if you get a non-school requested interview, like your SID comes and says, hey, I want you to do this, or hey, I want you to do the media, the press conference, I don't think players are going to push back on that. But outside of that, there may be a, okay, sure, I'll take, you know, an hour or two out of my day, but my time is now valuable. There is a monetary value on what an hour of my time for an interview costs. So you're going to have to come up with something close to that. That's the way we all operate. Like, if you want to do stuff for free, sure, but we all recognize our time has value. And now okay. These players are have a tangible value to it.
All right, let me ask you this then. In the comparative world of name, image, and likeness, as a former player, would you rather have the exclusivity money for the interviews, or would you rather have the name and number on the jersey at the official retail store of the institution? Would you rather have the Jones 20 hanging out there on the store shelves or the interview bread?
I think I'd rather have the Jones 20. I'm just assuming that that's going to net me more money. And also there's sort of a pride aspect to it. Like, I mean, you know, my senior year, there were 20 Georgia Tech 20 jerseys walking around a lot. And so like slapping Jones on the back and giving me a cut of it would have been great. And but that's the game that we all play now, the former players, like all of the group texts with former players that I'm in over the last month. At some point, the question has been asked, how much do you think we could have made? And that's the fun part of it. So I think from a pride aspect, though, I'd go with the name on the back of the jersey. That'd have been pretty cool.
By the way, for the
question
the record,
is though, Wes, yeah. after one of those losses, how much would an interview with me, what would that have been worth to you? Like how much would you have paid me for one of those interviews?
$5-10.
Hey. Honestly, I could have done some damage at Wendy's for $5 or $10. So you'd have had a deal there.
Here's the bigger question I have for you. Knowing what you know now, do you think your teammate Orwin Smith should have held out on that video game money he got paid postscript in his career after that court decision years ago when he ended up getting that check?
Yeah. Yeah. I think there's a few guys. You know, the funny thing is, as soon as you get out, you see the way multiple guys go about their business and make some money and some invest and all this stuff.
Yeah.
That is the cool part about this, is these student athletes are going to be able to turn $10,000 into maybe a rental, a home that they buy, an investment property,
sure,
where they rent it out. And now you've got passive income as soon as you leave college. Some of these guys are going to do that. And then also, it's going to help some of the walk-ons who have great social media followings and all that stuff. So there will be a lot of good to come out of this. But we got to get some rules going on so that we know where the boundaries are.
We've got to have some rules. All right, sit tight. On the other side, the Power Hour, kids. David Hale going to join us at 9:15. We're going to argue top unit groups throughout the ACC. But Jeremiah Gimmel of North Carolina made some headlines in the last 2 weeks when Jeremiah said, we're not really interested in that 12-team deal. Did anyone really ask the players? And in the process of asking the players, will their voice count? Packer and Durham Power Hour, Roddy Jones next.
Packer and Durham.